Good morning, listeners. You're welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. My guests this week are Padraig Fogarty from Teagasc, Stephen Robb from the Irish Farmers Journal. He is the renewables editor. Michael Maloney, and Michael is the CEO of Tipperary Credit Union. And my final guest this morning will be John G. O'Dwyer. My first guest this morning, listeners, is Padraig Fogarty from Teagasc, and Padraig is in the NINA office. Good morning, Padraig, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
We are going to be talking about current position initially this morning anyway, Padraig. So the weather is the big issue at the moment as far as farmers are concerned. With that in mind, what are the scenarios out on farms at the moment, and has much grazing taken place?
Yeah, so I suppose, Jim, the weather has been really, really challenging this spring. You know, grazing has been tough. I suppose in terms of grazing, you could probably split it up into three categories. You have farmers that have actually a lot of grazing done that are probably coming to the end of the rotation now. They will be on drier land and getting animals out for short periods, you know, most days throughout the spring. I suppose you have another category of farmers there that have a proportion of grazing done, but not as much as they normally would have at this time of year. And then you probably have another category of farmers that have very little grazing done so far this year due to the very poor weather conditions, and especially farmers on heavy soil types. They might have very little grazing done so far this year. Farmers that have a lot of grazing done, they're looking at starting their second rotation soon. But a lot in the farmers in this category, I suppose a lot of the covers or the second rotation covers just aren't strong enough yet, and they probably have to slow the cows down for the best part of a week until the paddocks in the second rotation get to that 12-13 cover of dry matter per hectare. You know, so they'll probably have to slow things down for the next few days. I suppose the farmers in the second category, their second rotation will definitely start later this year. Depending on the weather, you're probably talking the middle of April. They might not finish their first rotation if the second rotation grass is coming ahead of them. And then I suppose the farmers that have very little grazing done so far, I suppose the thing there would be to try and get out when the weather conditions allow. In the last couple of days, there has been an improvement in the weather. So trying to get out and trying to graze lower covers to get through area, you know, and get things moving. But I think the farmers in this category, it's very likely that they shouldn't finish the first rotation if the weather plays ball at all. The last maybe 20% of the first rotation, it probably will... It should be moved into cutting silage. Farmers on heavy soils would be used to that in terms of not finishing their first rotation. So some years, if April comes very good weather, at the end of April, it can be cut then. Other years, it might be shoved out until the start of May. Yeah. I suppose it might be no harm to mention that there probably has been some bit of damage on some paddocks this spring. No farmer wants to do damage, but we just had very, very heavy rainfall this spring that, you know, some paddocks might have been definitely were some bit poached in some areas. So I suppose the things to be mindful of around those paddocks is to make sure and graze it in the next rotation in dry conditions. Graze it at a slightly lower cover than normal. Don't graze at a high cover. That will encourage the grass to tiller. And if you can, and if you have an allowance for a compound fertilizer, especially with phosphorus in it, that will really help the grass to recover.
Okay, so that's the grazing situation at the moment. Padraig, what about silage ground? What is the best thing to do with silage ground in terms of fertilizer and, of course, the cutting dates?
Yeah, so I suppose, again, there's a lot of different scenarios out there with the silage ground. I suppose the first thing I'd be looking at is decide when you want to cut your silage. So I suppose if you want high quality silage, especially for dry stock farmers feeding cattle, or for dairy farmers, if they want that silage for milking cows, if their silage ground hasn't been grazed, you're really looking at cutting that in the earlier part of the first half of May. I suppose if it has been grazed then, and you're looking for high quality silage, you will get that in the end of May. I suppose other scenarios then are, some farmers will want moderate quality silage in terms of maybe feeding dairy cows over the dry period or suckler cows. If your silage ground hasn't been grazed and you're only looking for moderate quality silage in that scenario, you could shove it out until the end of May. And if your silage ground has been grazed and you're looking for that dry cow silage, you could shove it out until the 1st of June kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I suppose then with fertilising the silage ground, look, some farmers will have slurry gone out on the silage ground already, but I suppose a lot of farmers haven't got slurry out or haven't been able to get slurry out. Look, I suppose the things to remember with the slurry is, you know, I suppose you're looking at trying to get it on silage ground that has been grazed. I think that's important now as time is moving on. Look, the forecast, it doesn't look as bad this week, but I suppose I'd be saying, if you're cutting at the end of May, if you could get the slurry out before, we say, around the 7th of April, then you're looking at getting your fertiliser out a week later, and it could fit in nicely for some farmers. If you haven't got your silage ground grazed, I wouldn't be going with slurry on those fields. So you're looking at a chemical fertiliser then, in terms of nitrogen and compounds. Look, just I suppose the fertiliser requirements for silage ground, look, roughly for that first cut of silage, to cover your P and K requirement, it normally takes about 3 bags of 0730 or 3,000 gallons of slurry to the acre to cover the silage ground for your P and K requirement. The big thing to remember, though, if you are in the scenario of calving cows in terms of sucklers or dairy farmers, you don't want high K silage coming in either, because this can cause milk fever issues the following spring. So if you haven't got any P and K or any slurry out so far, and you're planning on going with either slurry or P and K, I wouldn't be going over 60 units of potassium per acre at this stage. So you're cutting your slurry down to 2,000 gallons of slurry to the acre if you are going with slurry, or if you're going with a compound fertiliser, I wouldn't be going over your 60 units. So something like 2 bags of 0730 to the acre would be a good option. And then you can top up with your P and K requirements after the first cut is cut. I suppose the nitrogen then, in terms of getting nitrogen out on the silage ground, look, a good rule of thumb is silage ground takes up about 2 units of nitrogen per day generally. It can take up to 4, 5, 6 units of nitrogen per day when growth really takes off. But a good guide is two units per day. So look, if you were looking at getting your, for example, if you're looking at getting your nitrogen out on, say, the middle of April or the 14th of April, and you're cutting the end of May, that's roughly about 45 days. Could comfortably go at 80 units of nitrogen per acre, you know, in that scenario. And I suppose the other thing to remember is, if you are going with slurry now on ungrazed ground, to put that into your nitrogen calculation. So normally, if you're going with low emission slurry spreading, you'd be getting about 9 units of nitrogen per 1,000 gallons, adding that to your nitrogen calculation too, to get up to that 80 units of nitrogen. I suppose the final point on the chemical nitrogen, when if you are going with straight nitrogen, most farmers will be, we'd be saying the choice of product would be protected urea over CAN fertilizer. It's lower greenhouse gas emissions than CAN, and that's becoming more and more important to meet our climate targets. It's safe from a water quality point of view, the protected urea compared to the CAN. It binds to the soil an awful lot better. I suppose it's cheaper than CAN too, roughly about 20% cheaper than CAN.
So your takeaway then from this particular interview this morning, Padraig, what is it?
Yeah, so I suppose the general takeaway comments is the conditions have been really tough. Hopefully they'll improve going forward, but there's no guarantee in that. I suppose be flexible in terms of grazing and get animals out when you can, where you can. You know, I suppose some farmers might be coming into silage difficulty at the minute in terms of running short in silage. And I'd say if you are in that scenario, it would be better to go and try and source silage now and don't leave it too late. The weather forecast, it doesn't look as bad this week, so hopefully things will improve. Keep chipping away at the grazing, try to get animals out as best you can. And if you are in a silage deficit, I'd be saying try and sort that and go sort silage sooner rather than later. There seems to be good supplies of silage out there for sale at the minute, but I wouldn't leave it until you run into trouble.
Okay, well, look, we're going to have to leave it there now, Padraig. We're out of time. That, listeners, was Padraig Fogarty, who is Chagas advisor with Chagas in the Nina office. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Stephen Robb from the Farmers Journal, and he's with me to talk about an event that they have coming up next month, and we're giving you plenty advance warning about it. And it's all about renewables, and there's two events that are very close to us here in Tipperary. There's one in Cork, and Stephen will tell you all about that, and there's also one of the events in Kilkenny. Good morning, Stephen, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, Jim. Great to be here.
Okay, great to have this event. We're all talking about renewables. There seems to be nothing else on the agenda at the moment. So will you give us a little insight into the roadshow?
Absolutely, Jim. So as you said, my name is Stephen Robb, and I'm renewables editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. And look, my job is to highlight the opportunities for farmers and for businesses and rural readers. The opportunities in renewables, and there are plenty at the moment. This is all driven by the need to reduce emissions, the need to reduce the need for imported energy, produce our own energy, improve sustainability of farms, businesses, etc. But also there's really good grants in place, and there's also a number of schemes either in place or coming down the line, which all presents opportunities for farmers. So in recognising this, we're holding a roadshow throughout April, Renewables Roadshow, whereby we're going to travel around the country and we're going to highlight these opportunities for farmers, businesses and homeowners. As you rightly said, the first event is kicking off on the 9th of April in Cork, in the Clayton Hotel, Silver Springs. And from there, we're going to Kilkenny, Lee Park Hotel, the following week on the 16th. And there we're going to Cavan the following week on the 23rd, and Athlone on the following week on the 30th of April. So what are we going to cover, Jim? Well, the night, it's an evening event, sorry, I should say, between 7:30 and 10 o'clock. And we're going to cover kind of four main topics. And it's the main topics where we think that the most and the kind of immediate opportunities for farmers, businesses and households are. Session one is going to look at renewable heat. So there's a number of schemes in place, Jim, for producing renewable heat on your farm or your business or household. The kind of big one, the flagship one would be the support scheme for renewable heat. And you can literally get paid for producing heat for your farm, for your poultry house, for your pig unit, etc. We're going to delve into that. We're going to go through some examples, case studies, etc., and show how it works for farmers. Then I suppose, Jim, the next big one would be session two, and that's solar PV. And this is where it's really at the moment. Solar PV is going to be the most widely adopted, most applicable solar renewable technology for most of your listeners, to be honest. The reason being is that, well, look, it makes sense. There's really good economic case for installing solar PV on farms, businesses and households. There's really good grants in places at the moment. There's no need for planning permission in most cases. It's VAT exempt. It qualifies for accelerated capital allowances, etc. All this does is just increases the business case. So we're seeing some examples where solar PV systems are paying for themselves in one and a half years, which is absolutely phenomenal. So what we're going to do in this session, session two, is we're going to give a rundown on the technology, the grants available, etc. And then we're going to run through some case studies. So these are real life case studies of how solar PV works on a dairy farm, how it works on a pillage and beef farm, how it works on a household. We're going to be using data that's collected from farms through our partners. Our partners are FBD Insurance, Irish Farmers Association, and Bord Gáis Energy. So these are real figures. These are real farms. These are real numbers. And we're going to show how it works and try and help everyone make sense of it. Session three then, Jim, is focusing on your farmhouse or rural house, and we're looking at the options for retrofitting it. So in other words, increasing the energy efficiency, try to reduce the cost of heating it and running it. And again, there's oodles of grant aid available for retrofitting your house through the SEA, through your local authority, whether that's the Croí Cónaireamh and Property Refurbishment Grant, or whether it's individual energy upgrades, one-stop shop services, etc. There's thousands available, and we have a number of experts coming in to run us through the options on how to do it, what it means, what it'll cost, and the end result. And then the final session would be a session quite close to my own heart. It's anaerobic digestion. We're hearing an awful lot, Jim, about anaerobic digestion because we have some really, really big targets to meet by 2030. By 2030, the government target is to develop between 140 and 200 new build anaerobic digestion plants. That's really ambitious. Look, it's probably not going to happen, but that target might become more realistic in 2035 or 2040 or so, and we're beginning to see the first kind of big projects going through planning and beginning to get shovels in the ground as such. So I'm going to be delivering that session myself. I'll be running through what actually is anaerobic digestion, what are our targets, what does it actually look like at farm level here in Ireland, and how is the industry developing. And again, we'll be running through a number of case studies as to how farmers can either get involved with project development themselves, or maybe get involved with a project being developed in their area. Completely free event between 7:30 and 10:00, and absolutely everyone is welcome.
Yeah, you mentioned that it is for more than just farmers, because a lot of people listening to us this morning, Stephen, will not be necessarily farmers, but they would be rural dwellers or people living in rural towns. So again, this event is for them because they can do an awful lot to their houses or to their businesses as well, can't they?
Absolutely. There's a lot of grant aid available for, you know, for businesses, first of all, particularly around the renewable heat element and the solar PV element. Like, businesses can get up to 160,000 in grant aid through the SEI for a solar PV system, which is absolutely phenomenal. As for the household, as for the homeowner, you know, now is the time, no matter if you're living in on a farm, no matter if you're living in the country or even living in a town or a village, now is the time to consider the retrofit options for your household to improve that energy efficiency. And that's because of the sheer amount of grants that are available at the moment. And this is where the momentum is. And I don't think we'll see a better time for it, to be honest, than doing it now. But there is a bit to it. There's a lot to digest. There's a lot of information to take in. And there's a lot of people to talk to. So in our two events in Cork and Kilkenny, we're going to have experts from Southeast Energy Agency, from Ballyhoura Development Agency, and from Energy Cork. They're going to be there discussing the options, you know, in real, you know, simple, easy to understand language. There's going to be options for Q&A sessions. There's going to be opportunities to go up and talk to these speakers in the end up. So, yeah, look, if anyone is in any way curious about what these grants mean for them and how they can make it work for them, then this is the event to go to.
Okay. And I suppose one last question to you, Stephen, before I let you go. You've spoken about the obvious ones, the ones we've been hearing about, but wearing your other hat as the renewables editor with the journal, what's the next thing coming down the line?
Yeah, good question. Real good question, Jim. So there's a new scheme that has been in development for quite a while now. And look, to be honest, it should have been out by this stage, but it's not. It's called the Small Scale Renewable Electricity Scheme. And I think this is going to be an exciting one. Basically, what this scheme will do is that it will allow farmers, businesses, anybody really, to develop smaller scale commercial electricity projects. So these are projects which are export orientated. So in other words, that could look like maybe a potentially a one-off turbine, for example, or look, maybe even a small scale solar farm, for example. But these are the whole idea is that the farmers themselves will be developing them. So this scheme will provide pretty much a fixed price guarantee for 15 years. So in other words, it makes the project very bankable. So it does. All of the large projects which we're seeing develop around the country, the big solar farms, mm-hmm. the wind farms, etc., well, a lot of them are being supported through a similar type of scheme, but it's designed for larger projects. So now we're seeing a smaller scale scheme for smaller scale commercial projects, for projects that you and I could develop. That's coming, and that's coming this year. And I think it's going to be a game changer. It's not going to be for everyone completely. Recognize that. Look, it is going to be a commercial investment-led project, but it's still going to be a new opportunity that wasn't there before. And we're going to touch on that as well, Jim, and there's a number of other schemes coming down the line as well, which we're going to get into. So look, www.ifj.ie/renewables is how you register, and I'd welcome everyone to come along.
Okay, so, and the events are taking place in the Silver Springs in Cork on the 9th and in the New Park Hotel in Kilkenny on the 16th, and they all kick off at what, 7 o'clock?
Doors open at 7, there'll be a number of exhibitors there as well, and then we're starting the night at 7:30 sharp, and tea and coffee at 10 o'clock afterwards.
Okay, well, look at Stephen, thanks very much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Stephen Robb, who is the renewables editor with the Irish Farmers Journal, talking about their roadshow. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Micheál Maloney, and Micheál is the Chief Executive Officer of Tipperary Credit Union. And some of you are probably aware that the credit unions are lending money to farmers through a project called Cultivate. And Cultivate are going to have a Cultivate Week coming up in April. Micheál will be talking about that with me, and sharing all that information with you, the listeners. Good morning, Micheál, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim, and thank you to yourself and your listeners for having me on the show today.
Yeah, it's good to have you, Micheál, I'll tell you that much. Let's start off by saying, can you tell me a little bit about the credit union in Tipperary Town?
Absolutely can, Jim. So just a bit about Tipperary Credit Union, just a small bit on the background of it. Our credit union here, it was founded in 1967, so we're coming up close to our 60-year anniversary. So while we're based in Tip Town, that would be our head office, like just we've got area around that we operate in, kind of expanding as far as Clare up to Clonalty, Kilcommon, down to Imlay, Kilross, Aherlow, Banshee, if you can kind of imagine that kind of an area. We also have a good presence in Limerick, in East Limerick predominantly, and also in Plassey, in Castletroy, that would be near the University of Limerick. So in general, I suppose, the Tipperary Credit Union, we have a very large and diverse area that we're operating in, and a membership base of which the agricultural community is very strongly represented. So we serve about 30,000 members. So in the context of credit unions, we'd be one of the largest and strongest credit unions in Munster and Ireland. We're responsible for 164 million in assets. So in terms of scale, like we're not a small fish in a pond. As well, I suppose, a few other points on Tipperary Credit Union, like credit unions are a cooperative. So a lot of your listeners will be familiar with dairy cooperatives. We're owned by our members and we're not for profit. Now, saying that, of course, we need to make a profit and the business needs to continue to run. But our needs, first and foremost, come from our members. And at the end of each year, we aim to return any surplus or any profit back to our members. So, again, it's a nice cooperative model that credit unions operate under and can draw a lot of similarities to the farming community in that area. The credit union is governed by a board of directors. We've currently 9 directors. They've all different backgrounds. And historically and currently, there's always been a very strong agricultural representation on our board of directors. And it's a relationship that we've kind of supported and hold, continue to support into the future based in the area we're operating in. Again, Tipperary Credit Union, we've got 55 million in loans outstanding at the moment to members, typically in around 20 million per annum. Strong demand across the board, really, for our services, mm-hmm. From personal loans even to agricultural loans or commercial loans. But again, and just a final point then, just in the background of credit unions, I suppose, for the 9th year in a row, they've become first in for the best customer experience in Ireland. That's something we're very proud of. So that's just a bit of a background on Tipperary Credit Union.
I see then that you have of late or recently joined Cultivate, So what does that mean for Tipperary Credit Union?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm conscious Cultivate Week is approaching as well, and we're delighted to be part of the Cultivate group of credit unions. We would have joined the Cultivate back in October, so we're only recently in the Cultivate brand, but I suppose it's not something that's new to us in terms of lending to the farming community. Like, we've been doing kind of our own agri-lending for the last 30 years, and we built up a sizable loan book with the agri sector and a lot of confidence with our local members here that are in farming in those industries. But again, we were very thrilled to align ourselves to the Cultivate brand, the national presence that gives and support that gives to the farming community. It's very important to us within our common bond. And we've just done, I might speak in this shortly, but we've just done a review of our farming sector and kind of, you know, what farming looks like at Tipperary Credit Union amongst our membership base. So we know there's the figures I have here, about 1,280 farm families in our common bond area, and the average farm size is about 36 hectares. And most of our common bond is in Tipperary Credit Union. But we do, like I mentioned, have those pockets in Limerick as well. The land quality is very good. The area has class one soils, suitable for all different farm enterprises. The main enterprises, as you can imagine, are dairy and beef. But there is a small representation of sheep and tillage farming here as well, which I might speak a bit more of. But I think from figures we had again, on some analysis, we've got 115,000 cattle, head cattle in common bond. So again, all these are reasons why we've joined Cultivated and aligned ourselves to Cultivate, and bringing our experience to the table and obviously learning from other credit unions. And the different, you know, it is very interesting, different range of farming enterprises as you go across the country on a national level. But I suppose in the area we're operating, we do see beef and dairy farming being the predominant farming systems.
You have all kinds of farmers in that common bond area, but basically you're lending to beef and dairy farmers. Is that correct?
That is true, yes. Yeah. So we do have all farmers. And yeah. Again, we're happy to work with all farming types and enterprises, but typically, yes, you can imagine from the area we're operating in, like, and the land quality is there. The dairy farming certainly is quite strong, and the beef farming is. If you have time, I'll give a quick little kind of just our understanding of the dairy farming kind of within the common bond and the beef. So we'll start with the beef, I suppose. Did a couple of figures on it. We you know, on a numbers basis, it's probably the largest portion of our common bond base here, membership base. A lot of different beef systems. We've got suckling selling calves as weanlings. We've calved the beef, summer grazing, winter finishing, you know, the usual systems, the variety of cattle trading systems. So suckling's by far the most significant enterprise in Tipperary and in the area we're operating. And we've about 568 farmers in that region. I mean, the average suckler herd about 17 cows. And we kind of contrast that then to maybe the national level and what other Cultivate and credit unions are seeing. And they're predominantly, you know, they have high representation on the beef systems. So the key kind of drivers there for borrowing and investment seem to be labour-saving technologies, grant aid for tames, and environmental regulations. On the dairy farming side of things, which is quite relevant here, you know, we can see the average dairy herd is around 98 cows, we'll say. We reckon we have about 326 farmers within our common bond, which we'd have a good few of them as members of the credit union here. And since about 2015, when the milk quotas were abolished, like, we did see huge expansion in terms of milk production, and that's kind of leveled off now. But again, looking at a couple of figures, it was quite interesting to see that, you know, during that last decade, we saw a 47% increase in dairy cows in terms of numbers. And although, I suppose, it's quite profitable, the dairy farm, and we're quite aware of, you know, the challenges that are there. I know the high milk prices kind of subsidised from 2022 to 2023. And speaking to Chagas and other experts in the area, we're kind of seeing some recovery there coming into 2024. A few other points that I thought were quite interesting was, I suppose, just some of the challenges we're seeing as well from our farmers and engaging with them is, I suppose, around climate change, the water quality, biodiversity issues. You know, we're conscious of the review of the Nitrous Actions Programme and the impacts that has on stocking numbers since the start of the year. But again, I suppose we are seeing investment is continuing in the farming enterprises, especially in the dairy side. We are seeing, you know, borrowing needs, investments driven by environmental challenges, again, by grants, farm productivity, labour-saving technology. So, and then just to circle back on the question you asked, I suppose, where there would be the predominant farming systems we're seeing here. Like, we are aware, especially down around Banshee area, where you know, there is sheep farming taking place there. There's, you know, approximately 10,000 sheep there around the areas of Clonbeg and Timpleneary, like, you know. So again, we're happy to work with those farmers as well in terms of any needs they have. But again, it just shows us a very broad representation of different types of farms and farming systems within our area. And they're the people that we're borrowing to and will continue to borrow to and learn from them as well as their needs change.
Okay. And then, Michal, what kind of farm loans are you offering in Tipperary Credit Union?
Yeah, so we offer two kind of distinctive loans, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, one would be an unsecured basis, and the other one being a secured basis. So if I talk about the unsecured loan first, we'll say, so we call it Cultivate Unsecured, mm-hmm. and we've aligned ourselves to the large number of credit unions offering this for just to be kind of consistent on pricing here and offer the same service across the board. So what that means basically is a farmer can borrow up to 75,000 without any security. We won't look for any charges over land or anything like that for a period of up to 10 years. And that would be a competitive interest rate of 6.5%. So anywhere from up to 75,000 euro over 10 years at 6.5%. And what we would see typically with the requests for these loans and funding would be around purchasing machinery, you know, purchasing livestock, mm-hmm. farm buildings or improvements to farm buildings, land restoration, reclamation, other works. And like obviously one of the most important ones would be working capital, you know, meeting the expenditure for the farm, any cash flow based on price volatilities or anything like that. And interestingly enough, a couple of startup finances for young entrants, which I know is always welcome in the farming sector. So that's the unsecured product. That's your 10-year lending, 75,000. And what the credit union here can offer then is a secured facility. So that would be security would be required on this, but that would be anywhere from 75,000 up to 425,000. So again, getting to quite sizable figures here. And what we've helped finance in the past would have been, you know, large projects, large buildings and farms and SATA tanks. We saw actually some solar panels and typically land purchases as well. And, you know, that's into more big capital projects. The rate at that then would be 4.89%, so just below 5%. And we'd feel they are very competitively priced relative to the sector.
Okay. And finally then, why should a farmer go to Tipperary Credit Union for finance?
Yeah, Jim. So first of all, like, we have a proud record of providing what I would be considered a top-class service to our members. You know, we're here to serve our members, and that reflects what I was saying about being the cooperative nature of credit unions. It's no surprise to me, at least, that the credit unions have been consistently rated number one over the last 9 years in terms of customer service. We've built up a strong agri-lending business here over the last 30 years, and we're continuing to grow that business under the National Cultivate brand. So look, we have the funds, we have the expertise. If you're a farmer coming into Tipperary Credit Union, I can guarantee you'll meet a friendly face, a knowledgeable loan officer. It's very easy to become a member if anyone isn't a member. We have a very simple application process for the loan, for Cultivate loans. It's just a one-page application. We make decisions on your loans at local level. I know how important that is. That decision will be made in-house. It won't be sent to Dublin or anywhere like that. And look, we're experienced at it. We can offer speedy decisions and quick drawdowns. You know, we tailor the repayments to suit income streams, income needs, a good benefit of credit unions in general and Tipperary Credit Unions. We offer free life assurance on the loan. That's an important thing to consider as well. And again, with all credit unions, it's certainly Tipperary Credit Union, you can repay your loan early without any penalty. You know, if that extra cash is lying around. So they're just some of the reasons. But I'd encourage any listeners that are interested to just call into us, or contact our branches, or give us a phone call just to discuss how we could support them if they need to. And we're always very happy to engage with the agricultural community and learn more about those, because they're such an important part of our membership base and our common bond.
Look at me, Hall. We're out of time, but look at, thanks very much for joining us. And before you do go, and anybody wants to make contact with you, you know, what's the telephone number of the Tipperary Credit Union?
Yeah, the main number here is 062-80400, and that'll get you in touch with anyone. You can make any inquiry at all, or you can contact any of our branches. So our head office is in Tipperary Town. We're open Monday to Saturday. And then our other branches are Plassey and Limerick. Monday to Friday it's open. And then we have branches in Doon, Limerick, Banshee, and Dundrum. They're open on Thursdays, Fridays. So yeah, and there's plenty of ways to get in touch, the website, emails as well. So thanks very much, Jim. I appreciate your time there, and happy Easter to you and to your listeners.
And I want to thank you, Michal. Thanks very much for joining us. That, listeners, was Michal Maloney, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Tipperary Credit Union. Listeners, my next guest this morning is John G. O'Dwyer, no stranger to Tip FM and being on air. But John is back with me to talk about some walking events that are taking place over the next week or so. There are quite a lot of activities, as it so happens, and we're going to try to highlight them. John, thanks very much for joining us.
And thanks for the invite to come on, Jim.
Okay, now, John, well, I'll let you start. So, start wherever you like. Before we went on here, you told me a whole lot of events.
Well, yeah, but one, I think, trumps them all. And, of course, people will remember the wonderful Michael Sutton, who always put everybody else ahead of himself and raised hundreds of thousands of funds during his life. And then, unfortunately, he passed away with COVID. So he had friends everywhere who couldn't be there to, I suppose, in a way, celebrate the wonderful life he had. And we were all out on the street. Well, now we're doing it. COVID is over. Easter is a time. It's a time of regrowth. And we are raising funds. And this time, it's not the funds I would like raised or anybody else. It's his own family. And Michael was very taken with funding for Malawi. And his sister was going out there every summer to teach students computers, which, you know, and there might be 100 in a class out there. So that was ideal from the point of view. It's an ideal fundraiser from the point of view of the family. So we're going to raise funds and have a day for Michael, which will take place on the 6th of April, and where else, of course, are we having it but in Upper Church? And anyone can come along. And Michael, of course, was a huge hill walker and cyclist. So what you can do up there is you can do a longer walk of about 8 kilometres, which isn't massively challenging, but it's beautiful. It's aiming a Kinnick loop. We also have a 4 kilometre walk for anyone who just wants to do less. And the idea is to collect funds for Michael. But the important thing to remember, that fundraising is already going ahead, and it's up on Go Fund Me, and we are already, even though there's been very little publicity, it's the Michael Sutton Malawi fundraiser, and there's 5,700 up on it this morning already. Our target is 20,000, and the important thing to remember about this 20,000 is this. 20,000 collected for a charity in Ireland is good, but it's immeasurably more in Malawi, because that money is brought out and it's spent. It's hard currency. It's spent, and it's, but there's a multiplier aspect. It's spent and spent and spent again. And then the important thing is their currency, the kwacha, will buy you absolutely nothing outside of Malawi. So they need hard currency. And if we can get this, this is 20,000 of hard currency that can buy in the things they don't produce, like the computers and that kind of thing. So it's a win-win for everybody. And all the people going out there to work are paying their own fares and that. We're just supplying money so that they can buy things like computers, do up the schools, building materials, that kind of thing. And it's on the 6th of April in Upper Church. And oh, it'd be a celebration of Michael's life.
And I believe there's a mass before the event for anybody who wants to join and say mass with Father Tony Ryan up there.
Absolutely, the wonderful Father Tony Ryan. But Michael was a person who never wore it on his sleeve, but he was an extremely devout person. And there is actually a sung mass. There's going to be a choir up there. They're going to sing hymns, and they're also going to sing some of Michael's favourite songs. Like, for example, he always loved that song, "You'll Never Walk Alone." I believe it's a difficult song, but they're training for that as well as that. Then there will be the walks, and you might even be there yourself, Jim, maybe at the head of one of those walks. And then we're coming back in, and there will be, you know, lashings of food in the hall where we all come together and celebrate Michael. And I understand then that there's going to be the choir will be there again, sing some of the songs there. And I'm being asked to do a small, I suppose, reflection on his life. I'll do a small slideshow, and then it will finish up with Dear McCondon, his son, doing a reflection on his life. So it'll be a wonderful thing. I think it'll be a great community there. The 6th in Upper Church, with mass at 11 o'clock. But if you're not particularly devout, then come at 12 o'clock and do some of the walks, and you'll have a great day.
Okay, so that's the walk for Michael Sutton and for that Malawi charity. Now, coming on, you have two ladies walking Declan's Way at the moment.
Yeah, two young ones walking Declan's Way. I mean, there's a one called Josie Maher, but she's only 83, so she's flying along it. And she also, I've been down and walked some of the stuff with them, and they already have two sections of it done, right? But the second person who's doing it is Chrissy O'Mara. Everybody knows Chrissy, of course. But Chrissy is 88, and I went down and met him when they were finishing in Gorton Bridge, and she was in the top half of those coming into Gorton Bridge. Bridge as well as that. And they're doing that down there. So the 6th is Michael. But on the 7th, if you'd like to join them, you can join in. There's still spaces on the walk. And it's a wonderful woodland, easy downhill walk mostly from Mount Mellory down to Lismore. You can join them. You can book online if you want to do that. It's €45 for the day, but everything is looked after. You get food on arrival in Lismore, a parking place. You then take the bus up to Mount Mellory and you are led down along through wonderful woodlands into Lismore, and there you will have food as well as that wait for you and a great conviviality. So that's a great weekend, the 6th and 7th, and it's all, you can book that up at stdeclansway.ie.
Okay, and then there is a week later or thereabouts, there is a video and a night out in Cabra Wetlands.
Yeah, it's a funding from Cabra Wetlands, and like I said, Jim, you'll know about this. I'm sure so many times you have led from the Liam Lynch Monument, and people will say, oh, the Liam Lynch, what's that all about? Who is that guy? Well, you find out all about it, because for the decade of centenaries, a feature film was made about the last days of Liam Lynch, which led up to his shooting at the famous monument in the Knockmeal Down Mountains. And what it is John Foley, the filmmaker, is actually, because he's already been funded to do it, he's providing the film free gratis, and he will be there himself, and it's a fundraiser for Cabra Wetlands and the environment they're maintaining out there. It's €10 to come in there, and what will happen is we'll show the film, and then there will be filmmaker John Foley will be there, and the well-known historian Michael Desmond, who knows all about the Civil War period, and they will discuss the film and take any questions as well as that. The only is just €10 on the night. It's going to Cabra Wetlands, and there's no booking or anything in advance. You just turn up there, 8 o'clock, watch the film, have the discussion, and then we'll have a nice informal chat, tea, coffee and food provided by the Cabra Wetlands. That's the 18th of April.
You said I led a few walks from the Liam Lynch Monument, and I've gone up there and I've photographed this fabulous monument. I rescued a horse up there myself and Eamon Lonergan, if you remember. Eamon used to walk.
I do, yes, indeed. I'm interviewing you, so tell us about the horse, Jim. Tell us, is he okay still?
I don't know. We met a man before we went who said, did any of you see a horse? Mm. We were parked up there, and we said no, we hadn't seen any horse, but we weren't walking any more than 20 minutes, then we rescued a horse.
Right.
And I had to let the group off on their own. Somebody else took over. I know no more.
And he didn't even put a few bob into your palm, did he?
No. God, no, thanks for it. Okay, and John, finally, maybe not for everybody, but you are going north in a couple of weeks' time.
We are indeed, and there's just a few places left on that. So it's which Michael Shutton used to be deeply involved with. He was the driving force behind it. Fortunately, we've kept it going. We are raising funds this time for the mountain rescue dogs and Meals on Wheels. So we're going up to Belfast, and there's going to be a choice of walks, some hard walks in the Morden Mountains that you'd know all about, Jim, and did in your time, but beautiful at the same time, to historic walks. We'll be doing lovely walks from Belfast Castle up in the hills above Belfast as well as that. It's a wonderful opportunity to come up to the Belfast. Everything will be looked after for you, and what you can do is that it's up on midtapehillwalkers.ie/events. You can see about that and get all the information on booking. There's about 3 or 4 rooms left on that, so if anybody wants to come along, and the cost is for the whole weekend, food, everything else, walks, bus transport out to the walks and everything else, it's only €225. A great chance to see Belfast.
Okay, well, look, thanks very much for coming and sharing all that with us this morning. That, listeners, was John Geodewire. And if you want a walk of any description, John has given all the details there. So why not make contact with whatever walk you want to be on, whether it's that with the two ladies, whether it's up in Upper Church, whether it's up in Belfast, or whether it's a night at the movies. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. A big thank you to my 4 guests. And before I go, may I wish you all a very happy Easter. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.